Blog Talk Radio.
We haven't been on for a couple weeks. I believe it was last week we had some technical difficulty with the Blog Talk site. And again, we're having a little bit of difficulty tonight, so hopefully everybody can hear me okay. I connect to the show via Skype, and they're having issues, so I'm connecting an alternative way. And we're looking forward to our show. And Sherry, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Jason?
Oh, just peachy.
Yes. Well, welcome back, listeners and viewers. We've missed you for a couple weeks, but we're glad to be back on. Yay!
Absolutely. And I see our why don't you tell us a little bit about our guest this evening? But before we bring him in, after you tell everybody who our guest is, I have a little bit of a personal ghost story I wanted to share. So tell us a little bit about our guest tonight.
Well, we have tonight's guest is Guy Blanta. He is with the Hawaiian Hauntings, paranormal group in Hawaii. He's going to go and share some stories, tell some stories about the haunted island of Hawaii in Oahu, wherever he is. He's in the process of completing his own book. So he's going to share stories about haunted Hawaii, and I'm looking forward to having him on the show for the first time.
Awesome. Yeah, Hawaii is interesting. I've never been there, but it looks like a beautiful and interesting place. And I see he's in queue, and we'll bring him here in just a minute. But I had to share this little experience I had the other day, which kind of startled me. You know, I've done paranormal investigations quite a bit, and I've captured stuff that I can't explain, but I just had an interesting experience last week. I work in a laboratory late at night. I don't leave till 1 a.m, and I was driving home on a well-lit, fairly busy road. It wasn't out in the middle of nowhere. It's in town, southeast Portland. Actually, I believe it's northeast Portland. And so I'm driving there, and I'm stuck in the turning lane at a light. And I don't even know how to describe it, but I think it could have been an apparition. And, you know, I'm super skeptical about everything. But what I saw was it looked like 3 feet tall, maybe 4 feet tall. And it was this dark, irregular mass. And when you looked at it, it was kind of had this blurry haze around it. And this wasn't out of the corner of my eye. It was right in front of my car, and it meandered across the road. And when it got to the sidewalk, it totally disappeared, and my light turned green, and I kind of slowed down, and I was looking for it. It was the weirdest thing, and it was translucent. And I don't know how to explain that. I don't know if it was a ghost or what it was. Normally, you know, you see things out of the corner of this eye. And I was staring at this thing for several seconds, trying to register what I was looking at. And it was just really, really bizarre.
It was a ghost, I believe.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I wish I could have pulled over and kind of investigated it further, but I was kind of in a rush to get home. But I just thought it was really, really strange. And creepy. So it weirded me out. Was thinking about it all night, like, what did I just see?
You know what you should have done? You should have brought your camera and just took a picture really quick, especially when you're at the light.
I should have. I absolutely should have tried to take out I should have tried to take out my phone, but it happened, you know, within a matter of several seconds. So it didn't register. I was just trying to compute it in my head what I was looking at. But yeah, so it was pretty interesting. So I thought I'd share that. But with that, unless you have anything else, we'll go ahead and bring our guest on.
Oh, let's bring our guest in tonight.
All right. Hey, welcome to Paranormal Horizons.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Perfect.
Okay, good. I got everything set up on my office desk here. It's the most quiet place that I could get to. I couldn't do this at home, not with my family.
You sound great.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, it sounds like you experienced something unusual there. Possibly a spirit or something else, maybe an elemental. You never know when it's a dark mass like that.
Yeah, it looked blurry to me too, which I thought was interesting. It wasn't really well defined, I don't know. Maybe it was certainly something strange. It wasn't like a puff of smoke crossing the road. I mean, this thing, it was just weird.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, usually spirits, don't they have a more white mist-like quality to them?
They do, usually. Was this all dark, and then did it turn white at all or anything?
No, it was all dark. It didn't change colors. It was just... I don't want to say it was black, but it was very dark.
Hmm. Okay.
That's interesting.
But, yeah,
you know, associated with dark, it's not... usually it's negative.
Yeah,
it's
negative.
That's the
we've
question.
Talked about that,
that
before. But
yes.
Okay. Wow.
I'm kind of skeptical on the whole thing. I don't necessarily think something that's dark is negative, but I'm kind of glad I was in my car, you know, because I don't know that I'd want to run into something like that on foot. So it was pretty interesting. And I've seen, you know, stuff before, but I had never seen anything like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, Joe and I, when we are investigating or even just hanging out and we're experiencing something, we always try to, we email or use the word debunk. We try to debunk it or explain it. We always go for the explanation first. And when we can't, then we go, okay, it's unexplained. But when it has corroborating experiences, two or three events that, you know, that tie into each other, then that's when it gets our attention.
Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it, too, is my background is an investigator outside of any paranormal investigation I've done, and I always try and debunk stuff. And a lot of times I can. But in this particular case, I didn't really have an opportunity to debunk it. It's great to get you on the show, and I understand Sherry says that you have a lot of or three stories you want to tell us about. So why don't you give us a little, Sherry kind of introduced you, give us a little bio about yourself and how you got into the paranormal, and looking forward to hearing some stories of your experiences.
Okay. You want me to go ahead and give you some background on myself?
Yeah, let us know a little bit about yourself and how you got into the paranormal.
Okay. I had an experience when I was younger. My grandmother, she had a massive stroke, which left her invalid, and she lived on the east side of Oahu, in the county called Waimanalo, and she lived with my grandfather, and she was bedridden for a few years until she finally passed away in her bedroom. And my mom said, we need to move from the town area to stay with him because she was worried that he was by himself, and so she pulled us up, and we moved down that side to Waimanalo, and guess which room I had to sleep in.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my protests immediately fell on deaf ears. And they were telling me, my mom and my grandfather said, it's okay, you know, you can sleep in there. I go, well, if it's okay, why don't you guys sleep in there and I'll sleep in your room. I immediately felt something was wrong. Something wasn't right. I mean, from my whole stay there, from the time we moved in until the time we moved out, towards the end, of course, you know, after about a year and a half, I got a little used to the place, but I could still feel an energy and something that wasn't right with the house. But anyway, something had happened to me in that house. And I wrote a story about it. And because of that experience, I couldn't tell my mom. She didn't want to hear it. She didn't want me to tell my grandfather because he's had experiences and he can't handle those, paranormal things. So it was kind of difficult growing up, not being able to express or share what I had experienced. And that's how I got into this.
That's interesting, and I wanted to say real quick later in the show, were you interested in taking questions from callers?
Sure.
Okay, we have one now, but I'm going to wait, and I know they're listening right now. We'll just maybe do that a little bit later so we can kind of get into the meat and potatoes of some of your experiences. But I don't envy you having to stay in that room. That would freak me out.
Yeah. The experiences are pretty extreme. It's called the story. I'm not going to read that one, but that story, that particular story, indicates that this is how I got into this. How I got into the field, the interest in the paranormal field. Because at that age, at 11, I tried to explain what I experienced, and I couldn't explain it. And even being at 11 years old, I had that analytical mind, you know, trying to explain things, and I was stumped. To make a long story short, I had the same dream occur about 4 or 5 days in a row, and on the final day, the day after I had that dream, I went to school and I came back home, and at 5 o'clock I had my experience. Yeah, it was during the day, and it was almost dusk because the sun sets on the opposite side of Oahu, so it was getting dark, but you could still see outside, you know, still lit. And that's when I experienced my first paranormal experience. I'm writing a book, and it's called Ghost Stories and Paranormal Experiences from Hawaii. They're a compilation of all these firsthand stories that have been told to me by friends and family. And many of the stories are from my own experiences or from my father and my grandfather, you know, relating them to me. So the sections are called Ghost Stories from Oahu, Ghost Hunting on Oahu, Ghost Stories from Waimanalo, Japanese Entities on Oahu, and Ghost Stories from the Big Island. Unfortunately, I only have three of them from the Big Island, but they're pretty intense stories. And I'm going to be reading to you. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and I can imagine that there's a lot of history and a lot of paranormal activity that goes on in Hawaii and all the islands, and we've talked about Hawaii before on the show, and it just sounds so fascinating with the history, the traditions, and it's just a fascinating place. I imagine the stories are great. So yeah, so you have some that you want to read to us?
Yes, I'm going to start off with a story that my dad told me. I think when he started to take me fishing, this is why he told me this story, and it's called Be Careful Not to Disrespect. Excuse me. Should I go ahead and read it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
It's like a recounting of what what he told me. Okay, I'll start it off. One day during the early 1950s, this was before my father had met my mother. He was about 19 years old. My father and his two friends, Thomas and Jimmy, decided to go fishing on the west side of Oahu. They had planned to fish a spot that was located near the Makua Cave. Thomas was driving, my dad sat in the front passenger seat, and Jimmy had the back seat all to himself. As they were nearing their destination, Jimmy asked, "Hey, can we stop somewhere? I gotta go pee." Thomas responds with, "What? We're almost there. Just hold it in." Jimmy exclaims, "I can't hold it, man. I gotta go real bad." So Thomas is driving on a two-lane road that is straddled on both sides with thick kiawe and koa trees. He sees an opening coming up on the left side and makes a left turn into a narrow dirt road. He drives a little ways in and parks the car. Jimmy opens the door and runs somewhere into the bushes where he relieves himself. My father watches as Jimmy emerges from the bushes, pulling up his zipper. Just as he steps onto the dirt road towards the car, my father witnesses Jimmy getting hit with some type of invisible force. He was lifted off his feet and slammed flat onto his back. Thomas and my father got out of the car and ran to Jimmy. He's choking and can't breathe. It looks like he's fighting to get something off of his neck, and his face is turning bright red.
Oh, my goodness.
They both don't know what to do except yell. "What's wrong, Jimmy? What's happening?" All Thomas and my father could do was watch the unbelievable scene being played out. Whatever was choking Jimmy finally lets go, and he sits up and takes a big, long gasp of air. Thomas and my father kneel down next to him and ask, "Hey, man, are you all right? What happened?" Through his sporadic breathing and coughing, Jimmy angrily yells, "Why didn't you guys help me? There was a huge Hawaiian lady sitting on top of me and choking me." Thomas and my father both look at each other in disbelief. My father asks Jimmy, "What did you say?" Jimmy again angrily states, "There was a big Hawaiian lady sitting on top of me and choking me. Why didn't you guys help get her off of me?" Thomas responds, "We didn't see anything on you, Jimmy. There was nothing on top of you." So Thomas and my father help Jimmy get back to the car and place him in the back seat. As Thomas goes back to the driver's seat, my father yells to him, "Wait, I'm going to check out something. My father enters the area where Jimmy had gone to do his business. He walks in just a little further and stops dead in his tracks. He sees an old graveyard in the shape of a triangle. My father strains his eyes to read the inscriptions on several of the headstones. The headstones revealed Hawaiian names on them, and some were dated 100 years old. The nearest headstone to my father is wet with pee. The name on the headstone is that of a Hawaiian woman. My father quickly exits the place and jumps back into the car. Thomas asks my father, "What? What did you see?" My father tells Thomas to drive and head back for home. Jimmy was still visibly shaken when they dropped him off at his house. As they drove away, my father finally revealed to Thomas what he had seen. Many years after this experience, my father felt it necessary to warn me when I was just 9 years old, "Be careful not to disrespect anything. Even if you didn't mean to do something, there still can be a price to pay." That's the end of the story, shared by my dad.
Wow, and we understand that, you know, the ancestral spirits there and respect is a big thing. And like you said, even if you don't intend to do it, there could still be ramifications, you know.
Yes. A lot of states, a lot of the states have Indian burial ground or areas that once were home to the American Indians. I think they have something in common with Hawaii, And I think, you know, I think if you were to a graveyard and pee on anybody's grave, you're risking, you know, you're showing disrespect, yeah.
Yeah, it's not something I do, nor would I recommend anybody to do. And it sounds like you really have to watch out in Hawaii. I talked to a lot of paranormal investigators, and I don't remember anyone ever hearing a story like that. But it sounds like a risky behavior.
A lot of fishermen, they usually, if they're not familiar with the place and they have to go to pee near a tree or by some rocks, they'll always ask for permission first. Because there's many stories like this that you pee and, you know, and it actually turns out to be part of a heiau, a Hawaiian ancient Hawaiian graveyard or a Hawaiian site, and they get sick. And they have to go back and wash the rock or give a hokuku, which is Hawaiian for an offering or a gift, in order to appease, you know, the spirit.
Wow. Yeah, it's not something I'd want to do.
No.
Do you believe, Guy, that it can happen anywhere? It doesn't have to be in Hawaii, but it could be, you know, here in the United States. If you, you know, it could be in your own backyard. Just your own backyard, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it can happen anywhere. If it's an unmarked grave and you take a pee on it, you could disturb the energy, the spirit. You know, the spirit could feel disrespected or offended, and that's when the problem will start.
Makes sense. Absolutely.
So this is the kind of stories I've been hearing a lot in Hawaii. And I believe there are other people in other places, other countries, in the States, United States. I believe they've had these experiences or something similar when you go to a graveyard and sit on somebody's tombstone or something like that, you know. There are a lot of parallels to this story. Just it's not only in Hawaii, you know.
It makes me wonder about all those, you know, hooligans that go around and deface cemeteries. It makes me wonder if anybody that does that has to experience any kind of spiritual ramifications. Like if they go home after knocking over tombstones, you know, it's probably not a wise activity to do that. But there's got to be bodies everywhere, I mean, in graves that we're not even aware of.
Yeah,
so.
Especially in, on the island of Oahu, when they're in trying to build some condominiums in the Kaka'ako area, which is close to the Ala Moana shopping center area. And there's a lot of coral on that site, and they find a lot of bones, ancient Hawaiian bones, yeah, and they have to stop, and they have to bring in an archaeological team, and they have to go through the proper protocol, and it holds up construction. And I don't know, a lot of times they'll move the bones and do a blessing. They'll have a Hawaiian priest come and do a blessing. A lot of people call it kahuna, but it's more of a Hawaiian priest or a healer. That will do a blessing on the bones and on the site. And that still doesn't mean that the place may not experience activity after being built. There's a place in further in, closer to the Kaimiki High School, very near the Kaimiki High School. There was a place called the Contessa Condominium. When they first broke ground, they found bones. And they did the blessing and what have you, but a lot of the residents there in the beginning experienced a lot of paranormal activity. And I'm pretty sure once in a while, you know, the condominium is pretty old already, so, but I still believe that once in a while they might be experiencing something, but not as often.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the activity has calmed down over the years. But, yeah, even through the, you know, blessing, when they break ground and do the blessing, move the bone, rebury, I still believe that there's a lot more bones that weren't found.
Exactly. Can I ask you a question, Guy? What do they do with the bones when they find a construction site in their building? What do they do with the bones? I mean, besides do a blessing, where do they relocate them?
A lot of them are relocated to the Kauai Hall Cemetery. It's located adjacent to the Kauai Hall Church, which is hundreds of years old. It's a Hawaiian church. And a lot of the gravestones have Hawaiian, mostly Hawaiian or Hawaiian families that are buried there. And I believe that they do put the bones there and try to repatriate the bones to that cemetery.
Okay.
Wow, what a great story. And what's the second? I'm interested to hear the second story.
Okay. This is from a friend of mine. Actually, he was my bowling coach, my junior bowling coach. Unfortunately, they don't have too many bowling alleys, public bowling alleys now. It's gone to the wayside. Mostly the alleys that you'll find are on military bases, such as Schofield and Hickam and Fort Shafter. Wally is of, I won't say his last name, just for privacy reasons, but he is of Hawaiian ancestry. He was born and raised on the Big Island of Hawaii. And this story is from the Big Island, from the youngest of the Hawaiian islands, the youngest and the biggest island in the Hawaiian chain. It's actually called Hawaii, but we call it the Big Island because it's the biggest of all the islands. This story is called Don't Look Up. Wally was born and raised on the Big Island of Hawaii, and he is of Hawaiian ancestry. He later made the move to the island of Oahu, where he met his wife and started his family. This is his experience. This is him talking. I'm trying to, the way I wrote this is he's talking to you. When I was in my teens living on the Big Island, my friends and I used to hang around around this public park. Towards the back of the park, there's a trail that goes through a forested area, and it could be used as a shortcut to get home. However, no one dared to use this trail at night because it was said to be haunted and many strange things would occur in there. The park was our main hangout spot, and we frequently stayed there until 10 p.m., until the lights would turn off. Several times we have seen a small white dog walk to the entrance of the trail and hop over the chain. Several minutes later, the same white dog would return and hop the chain. It was the same looking dog, except for the fact that it was several times bigger in size. We have seen this phenomena occur on different nights. One night, me and three other friends, one of them a girl, we're at this park talking story and having fun. We lost track of time, and the girl realized that it was past her curfew. She was almost in tears, saying that she was going to be in big trouble. Not wanting to see our friend get scolded and grounded, we decided to use the trail as a shortcut to get home, to get the girl home. I told everyone, no matter what, we stay together. So we head out into the trail, and about midway through, we hear a loud flapping sound. It sounded like a huge bird flapping its wings, and we could feel the downdraft of wind from its wings. I yelled at everyone to run, run, don't look up. We started hauling okole, which is booty in Hawaiian. But the thing kept up with our pace and stayed right over us. I yelled at everyone again, don't look up. The girl, as scared as she was, while engaged in a full sprint, still had the curiosity to turn her head and look up. She screamed this unearthly scream and fainted. This happened just before we reached the end of the trail. We carried her all the way to her house. Me and the other two guys were shaken up pretty badly, but the girl appeared to be in shock. Her parents were outside waiting for her, and they were really angry. We carried her into the house and put her on the couch. Then her father yelled at us, "You boys better go home now." A couple of days later, I spoke to the girl's neighbors, and they told me that the girl was not doing well and that she was ill. Her parents had asked a friend of theirs, who's a Hawaiian healer, to please help their daughter. I did not see her in school for several days, so I decided to visit her. Her parents were not pleased to see me, to put it mildly, but they did allow me to see her. The girl told me that the Hawaiian healer came over to the house several times to pray for her, and it was done in the Hawaiian language. The healer also conducted some rituals with tea leaves, water, and salt. A ho'okupu, some type of an offering or gift, was placed at the trail for the entity. On the final visit, she said that the healer could no longer see this thing around her anymore and that she would be okay. The Hawaiian healer gave specific instructions for her not to speak of the incident. She made the decision to tell me what she saw because I'm a close friend who had also shared that harrowing experience. She whispered in my ear, "I looked up and saw the shape of a man wearing a mahiʻole. That's a Hawaiian feather helmet that usually royalty usually wears. Yep. I looked up and saw the shape of a man wearing a mahiʻole. It was flapping these big wings, and it had red glowing eyes. I don't want to ever talk about this again." That's the end.
Wow. Red glowing eyes, that can't be good.
Yeah. When I heard this story, of course, back then I was still a teenager, but it was years later when I said, "Hey, it sounded almost like the Mothman, except for the feathered helmet that the royal men of Hawaiian royalty usually wear. That it has it comes up as a helmet, and it has an arch that comes over the front, and it's made out of it's covered with bird feathers."
Interesting.
So it sounds like these are very powerful entities if they're able to, you know, throw people on the ground. And we've heard that before from Hawaii, where these ancient spirits can really, I mean, essentially, they could kill you if they wanted. I mean, that's how powerful they are. They can certainly manipulate the world around you and cause harm. And if it was me personally, I would be afraid to leave a hotel room. It seems like the activity that comes from Hawaii is a lot more intense than what we hear about in the States, or that I've heard of from people. I'm not watching ghost shows because we know those are all joke, but it just sounds really like everything over there is really intense.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, like American Indians, their areas, their sacred areas, I think when it gets disturbed or disrespected, I think because it's so old, and I think the Hawaiians call it mana, or power. I think it's so intense that they do manifest, and retribution occurs. The one you were talking about, people can be killed from a Hawaiian spirit, I think you're talking about the night marchers.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, if you see them, so for me, because I got into this field and I'm learning, especially living in Hawaii, I'm aware. I don't know if I will do this, but if I saw torches coming towards me and I heard the pahu drums beating and the conch shell blowing, you know, that if you hear that and you're in the path, step to the side and you prostrate yourself, like, you know, how you bend over on your hands and your knees and you don't look up. A couple of my Hawaiian friends said, if you're not Hawaiian, you should take off all your clothes so that you show that you're, I don't know if that word is submissive or something to do with showing them that you're, you know, you're not, you don't have the pilikia, that you're clean, and you took off all your clothes. and you're showing respect. And I've heard from Wally, he told me that some people have been found on trails in Hawaii who died of apparent heart attack. But
wow.
They said it's probably the night marches. They came upon the night marches, and they didn't prostrate themselves, and they probably looked at them. And they also said that in the procession, it's either the warriors or a royal procession. And if it's the warriors, if you're of Hawaiian lineage and there's an ancestor inside the procession, they'll usually say, this one, they'll say, no, this one is mine, meaning don't touch him. He's of my bloodline. I've heard stories about that.
Wow, that's...
So even the Hawaiians, you know, with the bloodline, if you're not of their bloodline and the marchers come through, even they're susceptible to being hurt.
Yeah, we had talked about it a little while ago about the night marchers, and I found it absolutely fascinating fascinating and terrifying. And we did talk about that, what you just said about you have to take your clothes off and that, and it's all very interesting.
I would probably prostrate myself and not look up and just pray that nothing happened. My cousin who lives in Whitmore Village up on the plateau on the highest point in, you know, on Oahu, between where the old pineapple plantation is. That area is really active. I used to stay over there during my summers after school. I spend the summers at my auntie's house. Anyway, she told me that she went to Camp Erdman, which is on the North Shore towards the left side, away from all the big surf spots. It's more towards the left side. And one night, she did hear pahu drums, boom, 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 boom. And they saw the torches coming down the mountain and was heading towards what is that place called? It's called the jumping off point where all the spirits, when they pass, when a Hawaiian passes, they take the spirits and they jump off in that area at the beach. Kaena Point. It's called Kaena Point. In order to access that area, you need a 4x4, you know, a jeep to get in there. A lot of people go fishing in there, but that's a sacred area where the spirits, they travel from the mountain to the ocean. And she actually saw the torches. She said, you know, I actually saw a line of torches moving down, like people were walking. And she was aware that that was the night marches. There were already schools in the legend. So she said that was the first time and the only time that I saw it. But you could tell it was something not normal, because the way the torches move through from the mountain downward, that's thick brush and trees. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so it's pretty interesting.
Do you know if anybody's done like a formal investigation on the night marchers, like staked out common areas where they're spotted or anything like that?
Not that I've heard of. No, not that I've heard of. I know there's a lot of people that investigated the, suspected trails and areas that they cross, but they do. Use certain pathways that are consistent. So I, for one, probably wouldn't do it, knowing that that there can be ramifications to that. But I've never heard anybody, to my knowledge, that has investigated the night marchers and their path.
Probably because it's so dang dangerous.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm born and raised here, and I'm, I'm very wary of coming across them. I've I've heard conch shells before, but I've visually never seen anything. I've heard, you know, the H3 freeway, the newest tunnel that was built on the leeward side. My Calabash cousin that lives in Las Vegas, he told me when they were he was on the work on the work crew that had to go in prior to them doing the build. They had to clear certain areas and grass areas, and he came upon this large area of grass that stood about 3 feet tall, and it was manicured perfectly in a circle. And there were tea leaf trees dead center in the center, and they were supposed to clear that away, and he refused. He's Japanese, local born Japanese, but he refused, and he quit the job. So that area had a lot of heiau, children's heiau, grave sites for Hawaiian children. And after the highway was built, it was an elevated highway into the through the mountain into a tunnel. I heard a story. I think it was from Glenn Grant, from one of his books. I think I read it from there. That a worker that was doing an inspection at night heard the conch shells blowing. And then he saw the mist coming through the other end of the tunnel. And then he heard the pahu drums, boom, 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 boom. He jumped in his car and he took off. And he, I don't know if he returned to the job, but I would imagine that because it's so new and the area had been disturbed, that, you probably rustled up something that... should have been not disturbed.
I wonder if there'd be I wonder if there would be statistically more automotive accidents on something like that, a highway, than anywhere else. I'd be interested to know if that would be apparent.
I think we've already had some fatalities there. Some motorcycle accidents and automobile accidents. And there's also another area on the west coast of Oahu, in the Makakilo area, that's constantly getting accidents, some of them fatal. Joe Punohu and myself were discussing this, and we said that might be night marcher's pathway, because when I drove past that area, It looked benign, you know. There was no winding or bending curves or a blind spot. So, you know, it kind of makes you wonder.
Wow.
Absolutely. Well, we have 15 minutes left. Let's hear the third story, and then maybe we can get to our caller who might have a question for you.
Okay. Let me read this quickly. This is the longest story, so I'll blast right through it. This is also from Wally. Excuse me, coughing a lot. I went surfing today, so I'm kind of dehydrated.
Must be nice.
There's a big salt swell on the. I went to Waikiki today on the outside. Let's see. This is also from Wally, from the Big Island, and it's called Encounter with a Calling Ghost of the Big Island. Wally and some of his friends met up one evening at an unspecified location on the Big Island. These men were born and raised on this island, and they not only knew all about Hawaii's spiritual stories and legends, but they respected them as well. These men are called Tanaka. They are of Hawaiian ancestry, born and raised in Hawaii. Many of these legends were as real can get. One of these Tanaka men brought along an acquaintance from work. His name is John, and he just happens to be a haole. The word Kanaka refers to a person who's locally born of Hawaiian ancestry. The definition of the word haole actually means no breath. In the old days, Hawaiians would greet each other by pressing their noses together and inhaling at the same time. This greeting bestows honor as it represents the exchange of ha, the breath of life. as in aloha. When the white men arrived, they did not greet the Hawaiians in this manner, but rather with a bow or a handshake, ergo the word haole, no breath. Over the centuries, the word has taken on somewhat derogatory meaning. Many locals identify the word as meaning white or white foreigner. So Wally and his friends were at this forested area talking story, and the topic turned to Hawaiian legend. John began dismissing and mocking the legend. He said, "Don't tell me you guys believe in that garbage. It's just hand-me-down fairy tales." Wally tried nicely but unsuccessfully to teach this person about respecting another culture's beliefs, but John wasn't paying attention. After about an hour or so of talking story, John suddenly asked, "Hey, did you guys hear someone calling my name? I swear, I just heard a woman calling my name." The rest of the men look at each other with that uh-oh glance because none of them had heard anything. Wally immediately tells him not to listen and not to acknowledge his name being called. Informs John that this is the calling ghost and it can be very dangerous. John replies, "Oh, come on, man. It's all just superstition. Hey, there it is again. There's definitely a woman calling my name." John, yells Wally, "Don't listen, ignore it." John starts to move away from the group and is not responding to Wally's warning. He seems to be in some sort of trance, and he begins walking towards the direction of the voice. Wally tells the other men, "We better help him because they think he's in trouble." John has already wandered quite a distance from the group. He turns around and yells, "Do you guys see her? She's nude, and she's so beautiful." He turns and continues his advance. The men catch up to John and subdue him. Wally grasps John's face with his hands, and he puts his face right in front of John. Wally yells, "John, snap out of it. Wake up." Even with these men holding on to him, John struggles, determined to reach the woman. John then states, "Did you see her? She's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen." At this point, Wally and the men drag him down to the ground and hold him there. John screams, "Let me go! Let me go to her!" He struggles violently with the men, but luckily they are able to restrain him. As the men pin John with his back to the ground, they witness his eyes roll back up in their sockets, and he begins to foam at the mouth. He loses consciousness. A few tense minutes pass, and the men still have John pinned to the ground. As Wally wipes the foam from John's mouth, he begins to regain consciousness and his composure. "What? What are you guys doing on top of me? What's going on here?" demands John. The men realize that John has snapped out of that dangerous trance. Wally then explains as clearly as he can, "John, you're in the grip of what is known as the calling ghost. It can appear in different forms, and for you, it appeared as an incredibly beautiful woman. It will try to bewilder or trick you into approaching, and it can hurt you." John incredulously responds, "What? Are you kidding me? All of you, get off of me right now." Wally nods to the men, and they release him. John gets up off the ground and is obviously agitated. Wally, with a very serious tone in his voice, says, "John, if we didn't hold on to you, you would have either gotten seriously injured or worse. Turn around and look where we are standing." John turns around and looks. He is standing 15 feet from a small ravine, and there is a drop-off of about 50 feet to the rocks below. He asks shakily, "You mean to tell me I was headed towards the edge? But the beautiful woman, didn't you guys see her? She was standing right there." Wally explains, "John, you gotta let it go. You have to realize that the woman you saw was floating over the ravine. She was beckoning for you to come to her." John looks at the other men, and they all nod their heads. He takes a few moments to decipher what had just taken place. John finally realizes the gravity of the situation and says, I just couldn't stop myself. I had no control." Okay, I get it. Damn, I didn't know this stuff was serious. I'm really sorry, guys." John had learned a sobering lesson. From that point on, his attitude had drastically changed. He began to show respect and caution for the stories and legends of Hawaii. Over the next few months, John had become good friends with his group of Kanaka men, and they gave him the nickname "Haole Boy" as a term of endearment.
Wow, what a great story. That's That's the best one, I would say, out of the three. It's kind of frightening, actually.
There's another one called the Moho that has appeared in the early 1900s, 1920s, 1930s on the beaches of Oahu. Japanese fishermen would encounter a naked, beautiful Hawaiian woman, extremely beautiful, and she's actually taken a form. It has actually taken the form, that form of a nude Hawaiian woman. But she'll turn, and she'll show you her real features, which is a lizard.
A lizard,
Yeah, and she'll lick all the salt off of you and ride your back, and you'll turn a sickly green color, and you'll be sick for a few days.
Mm.
And that one was recorded in, I believe, in Glenn Grant's book.
Mm.
That's the first time I've heard of a mo'o. And I've asked Joe Ponohu about this, and I'm actually adding another. My last story is about this. I switched it off from the story from my oldest son, and I'm changing it to this one. And it's called the Polly Lookout Retribution. Three teenagers were throwing rocks over the Polly Lookout. And the Polly Lookout is the site of a major battle, the ending of a major battle of King Kamehameha's men that were battling the King of Oahu's men. And we don't know how many people died there, how many warriors, but according to Joe, he said it's very difficult because it's all it's not a written recording, but it's an oral recording. So it could be anywhere from 800 to maybe a couple of thousand. But there was a battle that did take place there, the ending of the battle. They were chased all the way up through Nuuanu, which is exactly where I'm sitting right now, the beginning of Nuuanu, and they moved their way all the way up to the Pali Lookout. So it is a sacred site. I mean, a lot of Hawaiian warriors that passed. So what happened to the two boys, the three boys, teenage boys, two of them got sick for a couple of weeks. The third one was a co-worker's sister's son. So that was her nephew. And she had approached me, and she told me what happened to him. And it was during that time, in the late 90s, that the family was experiencing this trouble. His appearance had changed. His demeanor had changed. It was, you know, like a possession case.
Mm-hmm.
His skin all over his body turned scaly, and a sickly kind of green color, and his nails on his fingers and his toes narrowed and turned long like bird's claws. His face morphed into his mouth came really small and elongated. So I asked Joe, when we were up at the Pali one night, Jaffe and I were up there talking stories, walking down the Upali Road. I asked him, what is that? I've never heard of anything like a birdfish. And he stopped and he kind of pondered it. And he said, oh, you said it happened up here? I said, yeah. He said, it's the mo'o. There are known to be several mo'o in this area up on the Pali. And I said, oh, yeah. And the scaly, you know, appearance of his skin, the green, sickly green color, the nails look like claws, it's a lizard claws, and his face elongated like a lizard. So, yeah, you see, you're not careful. Stuff like this still happens. And this is back in 1998. So, it was when I was working in a factory.
I think the moral of the story is, if any listeners go take a vacation in Hawaii, be respectful, because there's a lot of spiritual activity out there. And so we do have 5 minutes left. I want to give this caller an opportunity if he has a quick question for you. Do you want to take a question from our caller?
Yeah, sure.
Sure, okay. And I know who this caller is. This is our super fan up in Hawaii, Tim. Or not Hawaii, Alaska.
Oh,
hey, no problem. I used to live in Hawaii. I started out in the Big Island, the Hawaiian Paradise Park. When I sold that property, I moved over to Maui in Haikou, where I lived across from Giggle Hill, where the park is there in the Maliko Gulch. My question to you is, and you know, I heard lots of stories about where they had the Marine Corps tent city was up there, the tent base, and how soldiers would walk into the gulch and fall off the side of it, because it's a straight down, the gulch is. It's one of the largest, it's the largest gulch in the chain, Hawaiian chain, called Maliko Gulch, and it goes down into Ho'okipa, but coming down off of Haleakala. But my question to you has there been any activity, sightings, or reports of paranormal or spiritual type activity where Pearl Harbor, where the big, where all the ships were sunk and bombed, and there's loss of massive life there, I know. Of course, there's people still entombed in the Arizona and whatnot, and I was just curious to know if what is your knowledge on this, has there been any reports of strange activity or activity from the bombing of Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I've actually heard that Pearl Harbor, certain hangars, and certain buildings and areas are haunted. They've been experiencing activity. I've tried to get the Hawaiian Hauntings Ohana. That's Joe Punohu's closed Facebook group. We have several members that live on Oahu, and we were trying to get to the hangars and do an investigation. And I believe that the ghost hunters actually went there and experienced some activity. And I think it was the hangars where the airplanes, the old planes, are located.
I see. Now, my house that I owned was on 1640 Kokomo Road, just going up right up from the town of Haikou before you get to Makawao. Mm-hmm. And it was in the gulch, so you couldn't see it from the road. You could only see it by plane, or if you drove down to it, or if you were across the gulch on the other side where the cane fields were, which you'd have to enduro out to it to look across. And it was a very secluded, but there would be times where when I come home, and it has a covered walkway that you'd have to about 200 some steps to get down to the house, where I'd get to my house, and someone had been there, but had not taken anything. And I always thought that was just phenomenal. I didn't know if it was something from the spirit world or spirit realm, or if it actually had visitors and they just didn't even know, or anything, but I would leave the house locked, and I'd come back, and there would be, it would be open, or a window would be open, and nothing would be moved, nothing would be taken. It was just, you could tell that someone had been there. Is there any, of paranormal activity in the Haikou area?
Not personally. My mom's friend used to live on Maui, but I, unfortunately, was too young. I can't remember what area she lived in. But no, personally, I've never heard in the Haikou area, but I wouldn't doubt it, though. All the islands have mana and burial sites that still haven't been discovered yet. So, and or trails that they used to use. So, possibly.
That gulch, the Maliko Gulch. I'd actually had rappelled down into it once, and there's an old train down there. Where there used to be a train that ran across the river, and they had collapsed and fell into the gulch. And there's military vehicles; they're all rusted up and mangled up and all that. And there's just, it's just like all kinds of stuff down in that jungle down there. Of course, there's hundreds of chickens.
It's kind of weird that nobody took anything. If it's kids, they would have probably massacred your house if you were, looking for something to steal. So that's kind of unusual that, a window is open
the
and
house,
nothing.
If you can't get to the house, that's just it. The house is so on the edge of the cliff that you can't climb up to it. The only way you can get to it is if you walk down those steps to get to it. It's just too steep, So it was phenomenal to me. I'll never forget it, and I'm glad that no one ever, 'cause I live in Alaska now, and up here it's just it's just crime and murder. It's just crazy up here. It really is. Beautiful state, but just we live in a society of mayhem anymore, and it's only getting worse according to the news. So, brother, I want to say mahalo anoa, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
I enjoyed your stories. The stories were phenomenal. It makes me miss Hawaii. And I know it's just a pleasure to hear how passionate you are about it. Jason, I want to say thank you to you. And Pat, I hope you guys, it's always a pleasure to listen to you guys. Sherry, I'm sorry. I keep thinking Pat's on the show. So. Sorry, Sherry. Jason keeps telling me, Jerry. I got Jonah right here, yeah, and just enjoying the summertime up here. It's sunshine. I mean, the sun's out 24/7 now, and it's pretty awesome. But I got to get going. I just want to say I love you guys. And take care, and keep doing what you're doing. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Aloha. Bye.
All right. Well, we are out of time now. I want to give you an opportunity if somebody wanted to contact you, or if that was an option, or
they can contact me through an email, not my work email. I have a private email. It's lowercasing Parkview, Parkview, 240@yahoo.com.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show this evening and sharing those great stories from Hawaii. And did you have anything else, Sherry, for our guest?
No, not at all. Just enjoyed listening to him and having him tell his stories.
Yep, she was right. It went by fast.
Yeah.
I was worried. I couldn't fill in the hour, but yeah, it went by quickly, so I'm glad.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully we can have you as a guest in the future and keep us updated on what's going on in the paranormal world out there. So thanks again for taking the time to come on Paranormal Horizons.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye.
Yay.
Oh,
yay. More great stories from Hawaii.
Yes, definitely. Next week, our next guest will be Big Barry Gaunt. He has over 40 years' experience in the paranormal and the metaphysical world. Not sure about where he wants to go with talking about, but we're looking at possibly Mothman. He's had several accounts and studies and experiences with Mothman, and also I'm tossed up with conspiracy theories. So I'm kind of tossed up and seeing which one to go, but we definitely will have him back also again too, along with guys. So we will surprise our guests.
Two great subjects. I can't think back where we ever talked about Mothman. So that might be a good subject. Conspiracy theories, as you know, that's one of my, I love conspiracy theories.
So do I.
But, all right. Well, great. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. Thanks for our guests for coming on and giving us some great stories. And also our friend up in Alaska, Tim, for calling in and having some questions and sharing a little bit of his stuff going on in Hawaii when he lived there. And with that, I guess we'll bid everybody adieu and look forward to seeing everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And with that, I think we'll close the show.
Thank you, guys. Good night. Thank you for your support and participation.
Hope everybody has a great week. Good night.
Take care.